Welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And today's show on metaphysics and spirituality is going to deal with the metaphysics of lower and higher psychism. And if you would like to join in, you can. You can call in and have if you have any questions or any comments. If you're in the U.S., try us at 877-876-5227. And for those of you in Canada, how about 888-815-9756? Now, I realize that a lot of people think they know what psychism is. It's like, oh, yeah, that's when they read your mind or you do something strange and you got an unusual sense, you know, extrasensory perception, ESP, and all that stuff. Isn't that what it is? Well, kind of, because that's more about, at least in the common vernacular, it's more about generally the lower elements of psychism, which is what I'm going to describe in the beginning of today's show. But then there's something else that's totally different, that really is so different in many respects that it's hard to even say the two have the same meaning, because higher psychism is about where we're headed. It's about what our soul is capable of doing. Were it here in full manifestation, we are really an extension of our soul while we're living here, yeah, in the physical world, and also in other dimensions of time and space before we rejoin our soul. But it's important to understand that higher psychism is also our future. It may not be our future in this particular lifetime for most of us, but sometime in the future, it will be. And for some of us, maybe even now, who knows? I'm going to talk about that. So definitely stay tuned, because I'm not just going over some of the lower psychic stuff and talking about that. I will explain some things about it. But I'm going to talk about things that are really fascinating, at least to me. And I hope they will be to you as well. Okay, so what is this all about? What is psychism? What is ESP? How does it happen that some people seem to have it and some people don't? Maybe even the most of us don't most of the time have it anyway. And this is the best way to describe it. Lower psychism is really not an increase in overall abilities of sense and overall abilities to, we'll say, perceive, which comes from the sense, our world and the worlds of other dimensions as well. It is actually, in many respects, a lack of sense that leads to an increase in sense in very specific ways. But in actuality, lower psychism comes from a lack of sense. It comes from damage or restriction or loss. And it is a strange effect, because most of the time people think, well, gee, all these great psychics that are able to, talk to others from the other side, read our minds, maybe do some amazing things, able to be somewhat clairvoyant about the future. These kinds of things, if someone actually has the ability and isn't making it up, because I think there are many more frauds in this area than there are people who actually can do it. But regardless, this ability comes from actually some problem. We'll call it damage to some of the other more normal senses in their normal functioning. That's the way most people actually become psychic. I know it sounds strange, because for a lot of people, they say, well, don't they meditate or, say some mantra and that's how they become psychic? I don't buy that. Not in the lower psychic realm. And since the vast majority of people who are presently able to do these things in reality, the ones who really can do it, are doing it in the lower case, I'll tell you what the difference is in a few minutes, but they're doing it in the lower case. That means that it comes from this strange effect, which I'm going to describe, of loss. Now you can say, okay, how do you gain something by losing something? Well, think of it this way. Let's say that a person has a normal sight, okay, and they do rather well with their normal sight, just the way the rest of us do. But for some reason or another, they have damage to their sight, or they become completely blind. And oftentimes, these people gain increased or enhanced sense in the remaining senses. It happens because part of the sense itself is the energy that that sense is using and the way the sense is hooking up to the brains of the bodies that the senses are connected to, etc., is not being used any longer for seeing in this particular example. And that energy and that ability is transferred into other senses to enhance those other senses to make up for the loss. I mean, after all, it just makes sense. If you have, pun intended, I guess, but if you have a brain that has a saturation level of sense, which it does, by the way, and you only got so much to play with, and you lose some, then why not, and this is exactly what happens, why not have an augmentation then in the other senses, at least some of them, so that the person who is deficient in one sense, such as sight in our example, is gaining somewhat in the other senses. Now you can say, okay, but that's a physical thing, and I know about that, and I've read about that, but how does that deal with, you know, ESP and psychism in general and being clairvoyant, which is maybe more than ESP, or how does it get to any of that stuff? And the answer is really, it's like an extension of the process, because we need to understand, I think I do, but that our senses are not in the physical organs per se that they are ascribed to. Those organs do play a role, and the sensory ones do an excellent job. I mean, if you got eyes, you could say the eyes are a really wonderful thing, but you have to realize that that isn't really what the sense is about. Think of it in a much more simpler way, this kind of concept. And that is that every sense is attuned to a certain kind of one of seven energies in a certain part of time and space we call a dimension. And we have different bodies and senses in different time, space, dimensions. All there right now, functioning. The senses that have our most attention is where our consciousness is focused. And while we're alive physically, that's in our physical senses, so those take dominance. Those become the most of the energy that is coming in because energy is following thought, and the thought is coming from our consciousness, being focused in the physical world, so we have mostly dominant physical senses. But they're not just physical, they're also etheric physical. What is the etheric part? It's the part of the energy that we normally don't sense in a physical way, but only in an etheric way. And unfortunately, our present technology doesn't sense biological etheric sense for the most part. So we're able to pick up in our instruments, etc., etheric energy. That's called electromagnetic energy. It's just another name for the same thing. There are the same thing. And it's a spectrum of energy that allows us to be able to perceive things better, more completely and causatively than the physical sense could ever do. And it's where most of our sense actually comes from, even though we don't notice it because biologically we aren't able to sense it with our equipment because it is out of phase to the other kinds of electromagnetic energies that are all around us. Like you're listening to electromagnetic energy right now because I'm speaking via a digital telephone to a place that's hundreds of miles away from where I am, and they are then transmitting it to you via the internet, all using electromagnetic energies, which can be determined by instruments Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to use this technology. But you can't, most likely, sense me if I didn't have these electromagnetic instruments that I'm using, and vice versa, and other things, because your senses most likely aren't psychic, and you can't sense it in using some kind of machine right now or some kind of measuring device, because science in general hasn't been looking for it because it's out of phase. It moves in a somewhat different direction than the other electromagnetic energies that we're all familiar with, such as radio and television and digital information over the internet. All that stuff is easy for us to determine, but not so easy as the biological side, the living side of etheric energy. Now, that living side of etheric energy, critical for us to truly sense. Because, you see, that's where all of the really, really in-depth and causative elements to our senses lie in the physical world. So when you say, gee, I sense something, and I can feel this, touch it, hear it, smell it, taste it, see it, what you're really expressing is mostly biological etheric energy going through your senses that is then converted through, first it's kind of brought together in your brain, but then it's converted from the brain into your mind. The mind is a different thing from the brain. And then that produces a bunch of thought. And you say, woo. Now, you may ignore some of your senses, and then there's no thought coming from it. But the ones that you don't ignore, the sense that you don't ignore, you make thought about. And it's a great thing. And most of the thought, amazingly, revolves around the more etheric parts of the information than the physical parts. Not completely. There's a mixture here. But a much larger percentage. And this is hard to understand. So what I'm really telling you is that of the physical senses that we have, which are also electromagnetic or etheric, the majority of the information that we get, and particularly the majority of thought that we have about this information, comes from our etheric part or electromagnetic part of the physical sense. Let me give you an example of this. Let's say that, let's use sight again, I like that one. Let's say that you're observing an interesting flower garden, and you're looking at some flowers. Isn't that wonderful? And they're particularly vibrant in their colors, and they have an amazing sense of movement as the breezes go past them, and you're particularly interested in the way that the bees and other insects seem to be attracted to them, and a lot of other things that are going on as you sense the flowers. Now you might say, well, okay, I'm using my senses. What's the big deal about that? Well, you see, the interesting thing about the big deal about that is you had a lot of information that was conveyed in what I just said as the example that had nothing to do with the physical objective observation of the flower. As a matter of fact, the physical objective observation of the flower would be nothing more than a two-dimensional picture might convey. Whereas what I described, and I didn't even go very much in depth about it, was way more than that. You remember what I just said, obviously. And it was way more than you would have gotten out of a single picture. What's coming in here is the vibrancy, the movement, the attractiveness, the relationship of one flower petal, et cetera, to another. So much other information is coming into play here. And you might say, well, where is that information coming from? How is that different than literally seeing a picture? Or how is it different in general than just having a physical sense? And how it's different is the etheric part tells us things about the causes what makes that flower that way, what gives that flower certain characteristics, what allows us to develop thought about the flower that is more in-depth and more conceptual than just a bunch of example expressions, which I would call thought forms. So there's so much more that is gathered just in even our etheric sense than is normally thought about by most people. We take it for granted. We don't realize we're picking up so much fine-tuned information, which has an effect not only on our physical senses, but also on the less dominant astral senses, which gives us feelings about the things that we sensibly or physically sense. And then we have thought about it, which gives us thoughts about what we're sensing. And those thoughts, which are monastic in origin, can be related to others, and we can pick up thought from others at the same time about the same subject, amazingly so. So all of these things are going on in our senses, and they affect our ability to develop either lower or higher psychism. I'm going to get to it. Don't worry. I'm taking my time here, though, because this is not easy to understand. Okay, so let's go a bit further with this. Let's say that, all right, I'm getting some idea about what electromagnetic sense is like, and we can sense things that go beyond just the physical realm. But you see, if you could understand what I'm talking about, electromagnetic sense, and that you can sense things that aren't necessarily purely physically there, that you could just take a picture of with a camera. Because most of the time when you take a picture of a camera, you don't pick up electromagnetic sense unless you're doing a thing called Carillion photography. That actually picks up some electromagnetic issues, but that's a different kind of thing. Okay, so then if that's true, then we all have the ability to have extrasensory perception as compared to just our physical senses. You see, I'm taking us along the line here of showing that this isn't coming from no place. This is just an intensification of something that is naturally there. But how is it that then some people really are able to have a much stronger, complete awareness of both their etheric sense and beyond that, their astral and their mental senses? Most people that are lower psychic have very astute astral senses, or at least some of them are. And how is it that those become prominent in those people when, as I've already explained, they are not in most people who are physically alive? Because the physical energy is so much more dominant while we're physically alive and we're focused in the physical world. Now, while we're dreaming, or if we could astral travel, it's a different issue. But while we're not doing those things, and while we're just living our life physically, those senses dominate us tremendously. Even the etheric parts dominate us, obviously. Okay, so let me continue now. People, if they've had some problems, usually in a physical sense, but sometimes also in an astral sense that has become damaged, will compensate. And in their compensation, they will develop extrasensory abilities in their remaining senses. If it's a physical sense, the extrasensory isn't just that they have heightened hearing or heightened sight or heightened touch or whatever, making up for the lack of sense. They have something better than that. They actually can directly sense the etheric realm. And they, some of them may know this, particularly if you're listening right now, you might take note of this if you have a problem like this. But they actually become, we'll say, psychic. And the psychic ability may not be something that they define even that way themselves, but it is psychic. And I'll give you an example. And I've noticed this. Blind people who obviously cannot be witnessing somebody looking at them because they're blind, have the uncanny ability to pick up when people are looking at them better than the rest of us do, and all of us seem to have some ability to know when people are looking at us when we aren't looking at them. Okay, so they have an exaggerated sense of this. Now you can say, well, where is that coming? What is going on? Well, what's going on is other senses come into play. They actually can feel the amount of energy that has been taken from their other senses in their body, or that they're, you know, the body they're using, which in this case is their physical body. They can feel the energy being drawn from them, and that feeling of energy gives them a kind of a hollow feeling, sometimes in their gut, sometimes in their lower back, it depends. And they are able to, over time, recognize that that feeling is the feeling of somebody looking at them. The rest of us have this a little bit, but they've got it a lot. Some of them do. And the ones that do have it a lot. And this is a psychic ability. What we're talking about is the ability to sense that someone's sense is taking energy from us. That's what a sense does. It grabs a hold of and removes a little bit of energy from the whatever it is that it is sensing. That's the only way it can do it. And that energy becomes the information that is then transmitted to the brain and becomes part of the information. That's how it works. Now, this is not just metaphysics. This is also physics, what I'm telling you. So if you're a biophysicist, someone who's understanding how physical bioorganisms can work in a physics sense, then you know something about what I'm talking about, because you probably, or a few people in that community of people, then know that. Okay, so here's the amazing thing. There's a common explanation, a common thing that we all have, but some people who have damaged sense increases incredibly. Now, do you have to be blind to be psychic? No. You just might have a slight inability to use one or more physical senses or one or more astral senses completely, and the result is that then the other senses become enlarged. This is lower psychism now. I'm not talking about the higher part. I'm going to save that for the rest of the show, but I want to make sure that we do understand what we're talking about when we talk about psychism in general. Okay, so we all have this ability. We really do. But it becomes exaggerated in some. Could you make it so? Yeah. Not by just doing some meditation, no. I know some people may believe that. But yes, you could if you really understand the process and you wanted to become a lower psychic, not a higher one. You could exaggerate it. And some people do, I think, at least subconsciously, by reducing their ability to use some of their senses under certain circumstances in kind of a subconscious way, which may then accelerate and increase the amount of development of one or more lower psychic senses. Particularly some people who are lower psychic and do use this as a means of earning a living or impressing people or whatever they might do, or just using it for whatever reason, they might actually do this. Now, I'm not at all suggesting that anyone really do this, because there's some serious trade-offs, obviously, and there's some concerns that might lead to more problems than really solutions in a person's development of their spiritual side. Okay, so I hope I haven't lost you on all of this, because this is a lot to cover in a very short period of time. But I'm giving you the basics of lower psychism. Now let's start going into the basics of higher psychism, because this is really much more interesting as far as I'm concerned. Higher psychism doesn't require any loss of anything. As a matter of fact, it requires just the opposite. Instead of splitting the senses further, which is what lower psychism ends up doing, and isolating one or more senses from the others, higher psychism does exactly the reverse. It unifies the senses through creating light. And the light has to come from creating virtue, which means light in form of the things that we are doing in our daily lives. If we are creating more light in the world, in those things around us, we are also doing so in our own senses, in ourselves. And that produces a unification of the senses in the body that we are doing it in. As the senses, then there are seven senses in each body. I know some people think there are five, but there are two extra ones, which are very special. We'll get into that in a little while. But there's these seven senses. And if you unify the senses, even to a small degree, I'm talking a few percent out of 100%, if you unify the senses, all of the elements that are normally experienced in one or more of the psychic senses become completely enabled, allowing each and every one of the isolated lower psychic senses to become unified into a higher sense. So if someone, let's say, has the ability to instantly feel when anybody is looking at them, especially since they may be blind in this particular world, and they get that sense, instead of just having that sense, they pick up all the other psychic senses that could go into their body. They could pick up the sense of what that person feels like. And they can pick up the sense of being able to see the person at great distances and to know the relationship in time and space of where the person is to other objects, including themselves. They may be able to use clairvoyance and be able to, by joining enough of these senses together, you can determine where the person is going to be in the future and what they're going to be doing. Because once you know where a person has been and is, clairvoyance becomes possible by joining together time and space in the future and seeing the likelihood where a person is going to be. It is somewhat probabilistic, but it is can be fairly accurate. All right, so amazingly, now we have an interesting possibility, and that is that by joining together senses, we don't lose any of the normal parts of the sense, but we gain in every way all of the extrasensory perceptions that any lower psychic might have, one or two of, we get all of them together. Now that sounds like, oh, now we're talking about super people or something. Yep. We're talking about souls. So most people, you know, you've heard me talk about souls if you listen to the show many times. But one of the things we haven't really gone into is, what is a soul like? How does a soul experience things? What is its sense in itself? And how is that different than what we, as a subset of our soul, existing as a vicarious responses and in an extension of the soul here, but the soul can't choose to be here without losing most of its senses the way we do. So we are the extension, we're the pilgrim on the journey, but we are not the soul here unless we make ourselves that. And we can do that by the deeds that we create, the ways that we think, the choices we make, and what we create as our creator might in our life by being a co-creator with that great being. So all of these things are right there impossible. At any rate, I hope that has led you into saying, gee, yeah, I want to come back and listen to that, because you know what we got to do right now? We've got to go and have about a 3.5 minute break. Now we have an interesting commercial in here, which also another at another time later in the show we'll have an additional one. Please listen, because that's one of the sponsors of the show, and you should listen into that. And if you can, if you want to go and do something else and come back, I guess you can do that too. But I prefer that you listen, because you know that sponsor is trying to help the show and also themselves to do whatever they would like you to do. Okay, so we'll be back in about, 3.5 minutes from right now.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
People ask Leo Kim why he wrote Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality. He wrote it to empower you, to explain how you can discover the spiritual you, reveal your passions, realize your purpose, and find greater happiness in life, how to deal with death and illness of friends and loved ones, and to tell you about the healing mind, how changing your mind can and does change your brain, your health, and your life. Spiritual teachings, when merged with 21st century scientific teachings, will transform our lives. Leo Kim wanted to write in layman's terms for the non-scientists on what exciting benefits will occur in the 21st century when we heal the rift between science and spirituality. Buy Healing the Rift at bookstores, Amazon, or email him for a discounted copy at leo@healingtheriftbook.com.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. M-A-C-F-L-O-U-E-R.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And yes, we're going to continue on with higher psychism. I really want to cover mostly that subject in the rest of the show, unless somebody calls or has a question about the lower. But the lower, I find, you know, I don't want to make it derogatory, but I find it to be okay, interesting to some extent. Yes, it can be helpful because some lower psychics have really made inroads into demonstrating that there's life after death. I think that's an excellent reason for a lower psychic to exist. And also that in some cases, some of the messages they may reveal from the astral world, it plays into the personal lives of people in important ways to those people, and maybe to those who hear and listen to it. But in general, the reason it isn't so big a deal is because of what higher psychism is. Higher psychism is a way, it includes the two senses, it includes the two senses that I said I was going to tell you about, and I almost didn't tell you about it and started going off, but I'm not going to do that. It includes the two senses that I said I would mention, and many of you know it already. You say, oh, he's talking about the two spiritual senses. That's right. The two senses, the spirit and the soul, that give us an understanding of our creator or God, and then that's the first that usually develops, and then the higher part of that higher sense is it gives us a sense of how to create more of God, how to create more of our Creator. And we do this in a co-creative way, because as we discover our Creator, we also discover ways of creating more of our Creator, and then we can go ahead and achieve that. So those are the two additional senses besides the five that you may be familiar with that exist in each of our bodies. And we have at all times, while we're physically alive, three bodies. Now, once we die physically, we have two remaining bodies, and each body has the seven senses in it. I hope that makes sense to you. So there's 21 senses while we're physically alive, 14 while we're astrally alive, and seven while we're mentally alive. Now, the seven mental senses are special because they're kind of split up. Just the way our physical senses have an etheric part, the mental senses have a higher, different part to them, too, something correspondingly like the etheric senses in the physical body are like. Okay, I don't want to feed too much information about this. So here we have the question of what does it mean to have higher psychic sense? And I think the best way to describe this is from the soul's viewpoint. So as best as I can, I will try to explain it from that side of things. The soul is a being in its own realm that has a unified, higher psychic sense as it perceives what it is permitted to perceive from its vantage point in what is known as the higher mental realm. From this perspective, the soul is able to join together all of the senses that we take as being individual senses into one sense. And the one sense, which it has only in the higher mental realm, is the sense, we'll call it, of love wisdom. And you could say, well, but is love wisdom really a sense? Well, it is in the Buddhic realm, where the soul doesn't exist yet. But it's kind of like a higher form of thinking that is somewhat partially available as a sense to the soul. It isn't a completed sense because the soul, unfortunately, has to create a lot of human beings that it sends on a journey, that human being is clothed in senses and bodies lower than the soul, the soul's body, where the senses are all split. They're not unified at all, as a matter of fact. And they exist in the lower mental, the astral, and the etheric physical realm. And a little bit in the higher realm where the soul exists, but very little of their soul's type of sense exists in the human being. So the human being relies upon the soul to help it when it is trying to create more virtue, more light in itself and others. And the soul, in perspective, says, I can't go to those lower realms because I would become just like the human if I did. So it has to create all these humans, and that creates a problem for the soul because the humans are constantly doing not so nice things, because they are in illusion, because their senses are so split up and so messed up. So from the soul's perspective, its sense of the lower realms is very spotty. It isn't able to think of anything directly sensing what a human that it had created, a prior human that it had created, had done in selfish fashion. So it can't directly sense the selfishness of its own human incarnate. It only knows what's missing, which oftentimes is vast amounts of sense and vast amounts, therefore, of information that can become knowledge. So you could say that in many ways the soul has a pristine kind of sense in its own realm, but a very, very spotty and missing sense of all the different humans that it helped to create over many lifetimes. And it's missing a lot of the information from those lifetimes as a direct sense. It can extrapolate what the human has done wrong without directly knowing the full information of each like blow by blow expression of what each human that it created did wrong. It doesn't really experience that, but it doesn't need to, because it understands from the perspective of what it does sense about each human that it has created, how much is really missing, and how much and where and how it needs to make adjustments in its future incarnations. From the soul's perspective, it senses all of the good that can be made in the future with the other souls that it's going to incarnate it with and around. And its sense is one of God in constructive mode. Its sense is one of a work in progress, not of an individual lifetime of one of its incarnates, but rather of the goodness that that incarnate may have created and the missing parts that need to be further developed, that oftentimes become part of the genes, the spiritual genes of that human, which it can sense the spiritual genes to some extent, and it can make choices about what parts of those spiritual genes become part of the next human's incarnations that it's going to be creating. It will create one and then maybe a different one to balance out and change the outward results of the lifetime of each of its incarnate. The incarnate eventually goes back to full consciousness of the soul, never dies. We are not going to die. We're just going to awaken to being our souls. We'll either do that through great deeds of virtue, or we'll fall asleep and wake up to it. It doesn't really matter. It's like you fall asleep, and the next morning you suddenly discover you're this great being, and you just didn't know it. And in some Eastern philosophy, they say we're the ones that are sleeping and dreaming, the humans, and the soul is the one that's really awake. From that, you can see from that perspective, that might very well be true. Okay, so the soul has this incredible ability to unify all of its senses. And since these are higher mental senses, what it does is it develops a partial sense of love wisdom. It develops a infrequent but partial sense of intuition. And it is able to, the majority of the time, understand the needs of the next incarnate or incarnates, because it may go more than one lifetime ahead, that it's going to help create. And it will do so with other souls by hundreds. So it doesn't function in a vacuum. It functions just the opposite. Instead of being isolated, both in sense, as we are, our senses are all isolated, and also isolated from each other humans, we are isolated from other humans. No matter how much we think we're close to others, we're really very, very distant. The soul is neither. It is not isolated in its senses, and its senses are connected to the senses of other souls in certain ways. It can't sense everything that every other soul can sense. It can only sense what other souls are sensing when it is thinking together with those souls. So it can't sense other souls that it doesn't have direct, close communication with. But for those that it can, and it's in the hundreds, sometimes thousands, it can actually sense one with the other souls. That's an amazing thing. Now, someday it will be able to sense one with all elements of everything in the universe. That's a different thing than a soul. It's called an advanced or a liberated monad. Something, a word that you may not be familiar with, but it's like a super, super, duper, duper soul. It's a great being that we are all going to become, because we're all going to become our souls and eventually go back to becoming this even greater being. And the amazing thing is that even at its low level in the higher mental world, the soul can do a little bit of what it eventually will become. It's prone for greatness. It's going to be godlike. And even in its limited state, which it thinks undoubtedly is very limited, in comparison to liberated souls. Human souls are non-liberated. They're all trapped in this very small area of the mental world, whereas liberated souls exist in the Buddhic or intuitional world, which is like a very, very super omniscient place where they can all think together as one. Amazing stuff. Okay, and they don't have to be thinking together at the same time to think together as one, which is a big difference, believe me. Okay, so the soul, though, has this ability to unify its higher monastic senses. And when I say monastic, it's the same as mental. Yes, it's just another word for it. And once it is doing this with dozens, hundreds of other souls, it is experiencing an expanded life. This is going to sound too incredible, but I have to tell you what it's like. Now, you could say, well, how could you know what it's like unless you were one of those souls? Well, I got a little glimpse here and there from some things I do, but I'm not going to get into that. You just have to trust me on this. If you don't want to trust me, that's okay. Just consider it a great fantasy. That is a genius-level fantasy, because I don't know that I could have figured this out by myself. Okay, but anyway, this is the way the souls actually experience things. They experience the life not just of themselves and the fact that they've had hundreds of incarnates. That's a big deal in itself, believe me, right? And they experience all the good things of those incarnates, and they experience the holes, the things that are missing. They don't have to go through all the terrible things we do, which is good for them, not so great for us. But they don't have to do that. But they do experience the losses of the things we screw up. And then we do screw them up regularly. We're human beings. That's what we do. But you see, they experience incredible joy. And let me explain the joy part. They experience all of the good things that their humans have done. And while they are co-thinking with hundreds of other souls, they experience all the great things that all the other souls incarnates have done. Tell me that isn't a super state of joy. It is. By definition, joy is the experience of other people's great successes in creating virtue. That's what joy is. And that you played some role in it, you had something to do about it, even if you just recognize that you're playing a role in it. Amazing. Now imagine if you're a soul and you've got these higher psychic senses that you are using, you now are experiencing joy at a level which is beyond our comprehension as human beings, because we don't have the senses unified yet to be able to experience it, but we have the capability of getting there. And so the soul is able to simultaneously with hundreds of other souls experience the great deeds of each soul, and the soul only is measured indeed based upon their hundreds of incarnate lives, human lives. And then they do something else, which is even more wondrous. Okay, I'm getting really wound up here. I hope you can feel the energy, because I'm really excited about this. They can do something else that's even way beyond. This is why I love higher psychism. All right. They use their higher psychism to create virtual futures. And when they use their higher psychism to do this, what they are doing is they are interacting. And it kind of, just think of a virtual reality, you know, like, most of you know what that stuff is these days. And they are able to actually play out the potential of what they're thinking about creating. But they create, again, as a group, hundreds of different lifetimes, hundreds of different humans that will interact together in the next lifetime. And they play out for prolonged periods of time. It could be months of their time. In which they interact at various parts of each of their created incarnates' lives to see how it's going to work out. And they get to see the joy that might be created, and then they see the holes, the problems that might happen. And they have to make some decisions about which ones of their incarnates may have to be changed or scrapped entirely and start off with a different one. And they go through all of these scenarios, but while they're doing all of the virtue that is created, even in virtual sense, creates additional joy for them. Because they see the perspective of a God that's going to grow. Now, some of it may not really come true, by the way. I don't want you to think that just because they see it and they even experience it, it does not mean in the physical world that particular incarnate or group of incarnates is going to actually do all the things that they perceive. They are sometimes wrong. But nonetheless, they still get to experience these alternate reality things, we'll call them virtual realities, that are amazing. They are living such an expanded life from the perspective of me and human beings that it's almost hard to describe the difference, because it's way, way, way beyond what it means for us to live in terms of the meaning of our life. The life we live is so narrowly constructed in meaning in comparison to the life of a soul because of higher psychism. They can only do this because they can unify their senses. Now, I've got about a minute here to tell you what I wanted to tell you the rest of this. We can unify our senses while we're physically alive. There's a thing called spiritual discipline. I don't have time to describe much about this. That we can be doing. It isn't just sitting around and meditating and say, okay, I'm done. No, it has to be followed with action and many other things. But we can unify our senses if we choose and start to live like souls while we're here. We all have that opportunity. Now, of course, we would eventually have to do this with a group of people. That's why group consciousness has to be part of a spiritual life, because if you're going to live as a soul, souls live as in part as a group. They still are individuals. They still experience the world individually, but they also can experience each other as a group. This can all be done by us here and now. How's that? Now, I would love to tell you so much more about this. There's so many things I didn't tell you about. But I hope this has given you an idea about what lower and higher psychism is about and why the two are very dissimilar, although they both use the word psychism. We know that. And I hope this has been interesting for you, because I'm out of time. But I do want to mention a couple of things. One of them is, if you have any ideas or thoughts you want to convey to me while I'm off the air, you can do so at thoughts@whylifeis.com. And if you haven't had a chance to check out the website of the spiritual group I'm a part of, you can go to agelesswisdom.com. It's Ageless Wisdom. It's all one word, agelesswisdom.com. And just hunt around there and see what kind of things we're into, etc. If you have something you would like to contribute to things that we are involved in, please do so. We are very interested in any groups, individuals, whoever, who has something that they would like to help us with, contribute in any way, fashion, or form. But please be aware that contributing means, yeah, you've got to be putting out time or energy. You've got to be doing something. Don't just say, yeah, you know, I want to contribute, but I really don't want to, but I just thought I'd say hello. Well, just say hello and don't say you want to contribute, because that's not a good thing. We have some people sometimes do that, and it doesn't help us, because then we have to explain to them what they're not doing, which doesn't really help. Okay, and it's thoughts@whylifeis.com if you have any questions, comments, or whatever else you might want to add. Okay, and I just very quickly mention that Monday, May 18th, Mimi's going to be talking about the afterlife over at Mesa Fiesta. I'll tell you more about that next week, though, because we really are running out of time. I have to allow some time again, we have a sponsor, and I'd like you to listen to that advertisement for the sponsor. I'm going to give some time to our engineer, who's queuing it up right now, I'm sure, to play that, and then we'll just sign off. So until next week, this has been Niles McFlower for Why Life Is.
Imagine for a moment that you are transported back to 1909, 100 years ago, but you retain your memory of all the advances which occurred in 100 years. Airplanes, cell phones, the internet, TV, space travel. Now, come back to 2009. Do you think progress will stop? What will be the most significant happening of the next 100 years? Leo Kim's book, Healing the Rift, Bridging the Gap Between Science and Spirituality, will reveal to you the new scientific revolution and the power of the mind, wirelessly connected to the universe, will be the event which changes our world by healing many rifts and by changing our lives. Progress will not stop, and neither will you. Get Leo Kim's book at Amazon.com or visit HealingTheRiftBook.com.